high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
In one of the most consequential elections of our lifetime, and we have momentum. It is on our side. Can you feel it?
It's just the opposite. We're hundreds of thousands of votes ahead. Nope, this has never happened.
And Trump definitely has a connection with voters here in Pennsylvania, and that's why it's going to be close.
What's their biggest concern right now if you're the Harris team?
Republicans do have an advantage in early vote numbers. It's going to look a little bit different than 2020, and that's scary.
The only fact we know is that the Republicans have done a lot better in the mail-in and early voting than they ever have.
At the very end, we find a tie nationally, 49% for Harris, 49% for Trump.
So there you go. Every pollster weighs in. No one comes out except for James Carville that I know and guarantees victory, which he did. I'm pretty sure he wants to walk that back now because nobody really seems to know. Shannon Bream's going to be here in about a half hour, anchor of Fox News Sunday. Brett Baer in studio. He is the busiest man in show business, chief political anchor of Fox News. He's going to be doing all the coverage tonight. He's going to be all over the channel today. Brett, welcome. So what did you think of that montage? Eric can hear you, keep in mind. How good was that?
Really good.
Now, are you pumped up for that? You
really
cannot get pumped up without hearing that.
No, it's really good. I like the underlying music. You know, it gets you going.
So I'm watching Hemmer's 3D approach. I mean, hologram-ish. What was going on? I mean, he was in the air just coming. He's like Kreskin.
Yeah. Just it's amazing. It does look really cool.
Are you going to be using that all night?
I think so. And then later in the night, I'll get up from the desk and try to do that.
You're going to reverse it. Absolutely.
Yeah. But I think we're in for a long night. I think, listen, you look at each one of these states, and I've talked to people in every one of these swing battleground states. And, you know, they say it's all who shows up Tuesday. But so much of this vote has already been banked. 80 million. We've never been here before, and you know we're kind of tabulating each
campaign.
Get
used to it, by the way, right?
This is
going to be the new thing,
which is great, I think, because you know Grandma has a problem; she can't get to the polls. It's in, each campaign is trying to map out exactly who those people are, and for some, the data is really good. For other piles of it, they don't know. Like, how do independents break? How do they go? So we're going to see early on in the night whether our polls match the data and the actual raw vote total, because a lot of these states are going to put that out first, and we'll get a good sense of things early on.
How many states? What state do you think is going to keep us hanging the longest?
Pennsylvania.
Because it's so big or because of the systems?
So big, so tight heading in, and because of the system. They didn't pass the law to start counting when the early vote was in. So other places are already counting right now, so that by the time you get to election night, when the polls close, they have a big dump of votes. Pennsylvania starts opening the envelopes. And so, the governor and others say they're going to count and they're not going to stop like they stopped last time. But it's still going to take a while.
Because you talked to the governor.
I did.
And he was attorney general at that point, right?
He was, yeah.
So did he recognize the issues? I mean, everyone's focused on Trump and what happened at January 6th, but there were legitimate issues there that had everybody wondering what the hell is going on.
Right, because they changed the way it worked because of COVID. And it did it, you know, of all the cases that could have been taken up by the Supreme Court, the Pennsylvania one was actually legit because by statute, the legislature is supposed to make the deal for how the state deals with elections. And this was done by the executive branch. Anyway, they've changed it, and they're going to keep counting. What they didn't change was counting it early like other states.
So, I mean,
Georgia's going to be fast. North Carolina's going to be fast. They are top of it.
Yeah.
I mean, Raffensperger, I know you've talked to him. I've talked to him. They are way on top of it. And have a lot of security in place. They have water seals on their ballots. There's a paper backup to all computers. I mean, if you look at the processes right in some place like Georgia, some place like Arizona now, it's different.
So I talked to a higher up with Brian Kemp's team, and this is what he told me last night. I said, well, you know, what do you think? He said, at the end of the election, it's usually 52 to 53% female. It's higher right now. The problem will be all the early vote analysis is that Dems and Republicans are both changing their voting pattern. He says, we don't usually bank this many early voters, and they don't usually have this many reliable Democrats wait until Election Day. So I said, what do you mean by that? He said, well, we have there's lists of people we know are showing up. They show up every year that did not show up early. And we're like, what are they waiting for? They usually show up early. Now they're waiting for Election Day. So anyone who says this reminds me of, or let's project this forward. And they said the only thing that concerns the Republicans is the amount of females who showed up early.
100%. The gender gap is the thing that all Republican pollsters will tell you, you know, has them jittery. Women vote more than men do. They're a greater population of the overall vote total, usually, and sometimes significantly. If it is a big gender gap, that tends to lean towards Democrats, especially in the wake of Roe v. Wade, the abortion issue, and what we saw in other places like Kansas and Ohio, where women were motivated on that issue solely.
So the Des Moines Register comes out with a poll that rocked everybody's world that has Trump trailing by three. It brings up a bigger picture that we don't really know those non-battleground states. We don't know Virginia. We don't know New Hampshire. We don't know Minnesota. We don't know Kansas.
New Mexico.
Some people say Kansas could be in play because of the abortion ruling shocked everybody when they had a vote after that in 2022. Here's what Alex Thompson said on CNN, the national political correspondent for Axios. Cut 43.
It's not about Iowa at all. It's about what it says, especially about white women in the surrounding Midwestern states. If the biggest voting block in this country is not black men, which we've focused a lot about, not white men that we've focused a lot about, the biggest voting block in this country is white women. If there is a significant shift, even a small shift among white women in this country towards Kamala Harris in relation to the job decision, in relation to just being put off by Donald Trump, she could win this election pretty comfortably.
It's true. I mean, it is true. And so the Des Moines Register poll, I don't think was, I mean, it was about Iowa, but it was more about the Midwest. And it was more about white woman voter who is doing a protest vote against Donald Trump or a protest vote about Roe v. Wade. And, you know, inside those numbers is what scared people. That's why the betting markets all went crazy. Once that Iowa poll hit, then there was the New York Times Siena poll, which kind of matched in some ways about the gender gap. And then there was a poll in Ohio that had people jittery. So the markets went all crazy. And now they're back to whatever, 10 points.
Right. So NBC did a poll with men. Trump's up 58-40. With women, Harris is up 57-41. So it's 18-16. Trump's got more with men than women. But your follow up question would be, a statement would be, well, more women are voting, so does that balance everything out, if not do anything more? That Siena poll has Pennsylvania and Pennsylvania tied, Michigan tied, Arizona Trump by three, Georgia Harris by one, Nevada Harris by three. I've never seen her ahead that I've seen in Nevada more than maybe a poll or two. North Carolina Harris by two, Wisconsin Harris by two.
Listen, Nevada, you talked to somebody.
That's what you were talking about.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Okay.
And so I think that's screwy because you look at that early vote and somebody like John Ralston, who's been out there, you know, looking at all of this and says it's just a way upside down early vote for Republicans. They've never been here before. And day of vote usually doesn't lean towards Democrats, but they have to outperform in places like Nevada and Wisconsin on Election Day to be able to change the dynamic. You know, Ryan Priebus will tell you that he's looked at numbers every which way to Sunday and never seen numbers like this in Wisconsin. And so, you know,
which means
that Democrats have to overperform Republicans on Election Day, which has not happened. So it would be historically upside down. And well, could it happen? Of course it could happen, but it's just not on brand for that state.
Right. So there's a few things going on here. Number one, you got so many layers of it. You have a war in Gaza, and then that affects Michigan. Why? Because, believe it or not, even though the Democrats, who seem to be more open to the plight of these Palestinians, they're getting heat because they're backing the Israelis. But if you talk to Trump, Trump's, of course, I'll back Israel. Let him finish the job. But he's smart to emphasize the Abraham Accords and say, look, If you want to know who's bringing peace, five separate state nations made peace and recognized Israel. They're not the problem. Their mission when it comes to Iran is the issue. And that's when it comes to foreign policy. And Brett, you know this. People don't really care about foreign policy when it comes to our elections. Don't they put that last among major issues?
They do, but in those Arab
American
communities, it's a significant deal. Kudos to CNN. I don't often say that, but I'm going to say it here, in that they did a piece, I think it was Aaron Burnett, where Kamala Harris is running an ad in Minnesota and Michigan about supporting the Palestinians in Gaza and running the same ad, but with emphasis on supporting the Israelis in their fight against Hamas and Hezbollah in Pennsylvania. And so it's
the same ad
with different words, but aimed at two different people. And, you know, what is the policy? And that's part of the issue there.
It is. More Brett Baer in just a moment. He's got his cover. What is your – did you see your schedule or you just go hour by hour?
I looked to my assistant. And she said, you need to go here.
That's it. Okay. You're probably going every hour up until
– Yeah, I'm on outnumbered today. I know that.
That's at least an hour.
That's an hour.
All right, so you can watch for at noon. A couple more minutes with Brett, then Shannon Bream comes in and tries to contradict everything Brett says. It's a rivalry those two have. I'm going to try to get him through it. Back in a moment.
Hear the ins and outs of the 2024 election right here. The Brian Kilmeade Show. From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
I woke up today to the headline that Trump had called for a firing squad for Liz Cheney. And this is what I really don't like about the media. No, he didn't.
He did not.
You don't have to move me to not like Donald Trump, mouth of the enemy. No, of course, he expresses himself horribly. He has to add, she's a stupid person because he's
a
moron.
Well, Trump knows what it's really
about. But just so... You know, just don't lie to me. I don't like Donald Trump. Don't lie to me and tell me he wants in front of a firing squad.
So that what Bill Maher said on Friday night was 100% correct. So what happens is you see these Drudge headlines, and Brett, I don't know how you feel, but sometimes, like, so I'm up in the morning at 2:30, I'm seeing them first, and I'm going, okay, what does this mean? Then you click on it, I'm like, wait a second, let me see the soundbite. I can't even read it. I got to go to the soundbite. And the soundbite was this, to Tucker. He says she's a warmonger. Imagine how, to paraphrase, how tough would you be if you knew you were going to get shot in the line of duty? And Bill Maher picked that out. How many times has he stepped up and been the voice of reason over the last 2 years?
It's really, really great to hear. I think it's all that context is lost. It's, those headlines always jump. You know, Morning Joe goes to the nth degree, half hour. Now, the flip side is, when the former president gets into detail about nine barrels in her face, it does stir the pot. He knows that, I think. Like, I think he thinks the left is going to explode by some of the things that he says, and they do, and it happens every time. And it's somebody like Bill Maher that calls out the context and says he wasn't saying firing squad.
Right, yeah, wait for it. So in terms of experts, Jim Messina on another channel ran Obama's race twice, won, cut 32.
What's their biggest concern right now if you're the Harris team?
Well, look, I think it's a couple things. The early vote numbers are a little scary, and you and I have been texting back and forth. Republicans didn't do what they did last time. Last time Trump said don't early vote, and so they didn't. Republicans do have an advantage in early vote numbers. When the early vote come in, it's going to look a little bit different than 2020, and that's scary.
So that's what they're – I mean, there's a guy being more of an analyst.
Yeah.
So the early votes, there's a lot of them. I mean, Trump's happy about it. The question is, did he cannibalize voting day?
Right.
Or did he bring out those people that don't normally vote? That's what Charlie Kirk and Elon Musk have been focused on with their ground game.
Right.
Low propensity voters.
We're getting a sense that in Arizona, Nevada, and Wisconsin that they're seeing numbers and things that – just look really, really good for Republicans, those three states. The other four states are big, bigger question about whether it's cannibalizing the Republican day of vote or and the what we talked about earlier, the gender split. And I think that, listen, I asked Mark Penn, Democratic pollster, last night on my panel, who would you rather be tonight heading into Tuesday? And he said Trump. And I think he was really just laying it out, but he said Trump.
He also said something interesting that don't worry about what Trump's saying. That's all baked in. There's nothing he's saying that's going to change anything out there. Chris Christie said that, too.
Which is why these polls late, even the Iowa poll or this New York Times poll, whenever you poll within a week of an election, there's in pollster circles, they say that that's sometimes a little bit volatile.
So Brett Baer, obviously here, Nikki Haley puts a Wall Street Journal editorial today. Did they send it to you? So I said earlier, I got it sent to me like, this is better than an appearance on stage. Trump isn't pitch perfect, but he's the better choice. On foreign policy, the Biden agenda has made the world far more dangerous. Biden and Harris have made it dramatically worse. Their debacle in Afghanistan, Ukraine, the appeasement of Iran. They're kissing up to despotic leaders, emboldened to pursue war with Israel. And he goes on exactly like she campaigned and said that Trump does a lot of good things, get past the personality. So from her perspective, you just interviewed her.
Mm-hmm.
Does this help her? And does it help him?
I think it helps
both
of them.
She's got to look at life after Trump.
Yeah, I think it helps both of them, actually. I think it would have probably been better if she just took it upon herself to go out there and campaign for Trump, even though she wasn't asked. But this helps in the close. It's very tight. It's scripted. It's how, you know, it lays it out, as opposed to when doing an interview like she did with me, there would be a part of that soundbite that says, I don't like the bro chismo stuff and the focus on too much masculinity.
On MSG.
Yeah. And so that's the soundbite that gets picked up from my interview, even though she said a lot of this stuff about foreign policy and the right choice, but that gets overlooked in an interview. So this lays it out very succinctly and probably for the Trump campaign is a better pitch.
I'm fascinated by your take. What happens to the Washington Post after this when Jeff Bezos says no one trusts us, we're not endorsing, and they say I quit, and 250,000 subscribers say I'm out? You know what Washington Post means to your city.
Yeah. I don't know. I read that Jeff Bezos piece and thought it was pretty straight down the line. And he was kind of accurate. Like, do people really move their votes by a paper endorsing? I don't think they do. And why, you know, put your finger on the scale? Now, the people at the paper are saying, you're going to choose that this time? Like, this is the time you're going to do that? So I think it's bumpy roads ahead. But there was something inherently kind of straightforward about it, the way he did it.
USA Today, LA Times, the Minnesota Star Tribune, I think it is, all said no, with Governor Walz on the ticket. It's amazing. So many intriguing storylines. And I haven't had anyone that says, let me just tell you what's going to happen. Brett Baer, you're getting the closest. You'll get it out of some of your experts tonight.
Yes.
We'll see you on Outnumbered. You'll play the man you're wearing that?
Yeah, I am. I think not changing.
I think it's a good move.
Yeah.
I think it's really good.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
We have record-setting early voting numbers that nobody's ever seen before. Can you believe it? I mean, basically, correct me if I'm wrong, but the Republican Party never wins early.
We need everyone to vote in Michigan. You will make the difference in this election.
So those are just some of the closing messages between the two. They need the turnout, and most pollsters, as you just saw, we went over with Brett, are too close to call. Now, Brett's arch rival is with me right now, Shannon Bream, anchor of Fox News Sunday, Fox News chief legal correspondent, author of so many books. They're too great to mention. Very controversial.
If you find the Bible controversial, which a lot of people do, then yes, my books are controversial these days. Yeah.
So, Shannon, the closing arguments. Trump's veeing off script a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
And she's not. She doesn't mention his name over the last day, but she did Thursday, Friday, Saturday like never before. Mm-hmm. But this weekend on Sunday, and I imagine today, she's going to just talk about joy.
Well, yes, they say she want to close. She wants to close in a fully positive message. So they've been sort of all over the place. And listen, campaigns do this. You run both negative and positive ads at the same time. You try all kinds of different messaging. They were joy and vibes for a long time, and then they got really dark and fascist and all that kind of stuff. But we're swinging back to finish on a positive note, apparently. By the way, is it disrespectful that I'm sitting down? Should I be standing up because you're standing up?
It's not your option. I'll do it.
Okay.
Maybe you're subtly telling me I'm being disrespectful.
No.
So this
is your show.
This Trump's closing right now. He's got a rally going on. It actually starts in 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
He's in Raleigh, North Carolina. Shows you he's concerned about North Carolina, right?
Right?
This is three visits in 48 hours.
Yeah, and JD's
he had two visits
there too.
Saturday.
Yeah, Vance will be there today, too.
Right. So at 2 o'clock, he's going to be in Reading. I said Reading. Everyone in Pennsylvania blasted me. I deserve
it. I married into a Pennsylvania family. There's They're difficult cities and towns that right. I always am afraid I'm messing up.
Pittsburgh, easy to pronounce. 6
that
o'clock
is.
Tonight. 10:30, president will close out, as he does traditionally, three times in a row, Grand Rapids,
mm-hmm,
Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And he always said in 2016, I wish I went to Minnesota one more time. I would have won the state.
Mm.
But and then just on
Tim Walz has got that thing locked down for the other side of the ticket. I don't think you're going.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so.
I'm not positive. For her, she is going to be. I had it right here.
I did, too. I got their little list of where they're going to be.
What am I thinking? Why didn't I?
Where did it go? Them?
But she is, I think she's significant, too, because she's all over Pennsylvania. Tim Walz is going to be in La Crosse, Wisconsin. He's going to be in La Crosse, Wisconsin for three stops, Detroit, Michigan to close it out. J.D. Vance is going to be in Wisconsin, Flint, Atlanta, Georgia, and the new town, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I lied about North Carolina.
Right.
And not on purpose, though.
Right.
It was just that the brain is getting scrambled with all of these different visits.
So we're going back and forth on where this is going to go, and Trump's going to make some mistakes. I watched Chris Christie last night, yesterday afternoon, but I watched it at night, and he's basically, I thought he was just going to be anti-Trump because
he has been in the past.
He just said, you guys keep playing his sound bites about him making these statements about the media being shot. Nobody cares. We're done. We all know it. You're for him or against him.
Right. I think
it's
that's
not
baked in.
It's really not. It's baked
in.
So he thinks it, and Mark Penn said essentially that too. He said it's going to be close, but I'd rather be Trump than be Harris.
Well, and you know, there were a couple deep dive pieces. I think Wall Street Journal, New York Times, they went out across the country to talk to people about where they are, and they found that a lot of people. One of the lines in one of the pieces was people care more about payday than they do January 6th. Like you can talk about these things and talk about Trump. They've already kind of baked it in. Like, all right, I know what I'm getting with Trump. I may not like his, antics, and I might not like his statements. And I'm like, what? But if for you feel like the economy was better under him, that is for a lot of these voters that they talk to, just anecdotally across the country, more important to them.
So
we'll see.
Yeah, it's just they also said this is going to be the campaign known as the podcast pancake. Campaign, just unorthodox podcast.
Rogan, Call Me Daddy.
Yeah,
all that
I want
stuff.
You to hear. So John Fetterman, to his credit, went on Joe Rogan. Kamala Harris didn't. Cut 25.
It went down because Trump.
Cut five is cut 25 on the border wall. Listen to this debate.
It went down because Trump, he declared that's a bad deal after it was negotiated with the other side.
But didn't that deal also involve amnesty? And didn't that deal also involve a significant number of illegal aliens being allowed into the country every year? I think it was 2 million people. It was still the same sort of situation, and their fear is exactly what I talked about, that these people will be moved to swing states and that will be used to essentially rig those states and turn them blue forever.
I'm not really sure if that's what's in play. I think it's really like it's important that we have an honest conversation.
But doesn't that seem logical, though? If you have a significant number of people that are being moved into swing states that have come across the border illegally, and then you've provided them with all these services, you provided them with food stamps, EBT, you've provided them with housing. You could, if you gave those people amnesty and allowed those people to vote, and it was very organized. You're talking about 75,000 votes over a few counties.
It would have been a difference. That's his point. And Fetterman's been an honest broker, kind
yes.
of one of the most interesting people to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
And Rogan brings this up because he's not voting Republican. He says, I went for Bernie Sanders last time. And then when he lost, I don't think he voted.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this time he might be going with Trump just by the way they hit it off.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think he's going to really endorse. You think are we overstating their power?
I don't know. You think about who listens to Joe Rogan, and it is a pretty broad audience. People will say, like, oh, it's young men, but it's not. I mean, it's not just young men. I mean, you've got millions and millions. I think he might. You're number two in podcasts, right? He's number one.
Well, I mean, we do good, but I don't think we're close yet.
You go back and forth. He's got tens of millions of people listening to his podcast, so you're reaching a broad cross section. I had one friend reach out to me to say, because I said to her, "Do the Rogan thing. If you hear all the stuff about Trump and then you watched him on that, you'd be like, oh, this is not the same guy that I've heard about. Like, he was able to talk about all kinds of different topics, and it seemed funny and comfortable and that kind of thing. Different than when you see him at his rallies, because he's preaching to the choir there. But I said, I'm not sure how far this reaches. And she said, oh, yeah, I've got some mom friends, my young mom friends, who listened to it, and that Rogan thing actually swayed them on Trump. So it does have power. And listen, if this entire election is as tight as the polls claim that it is, then Rogan could be a game changer.
But you know why? Because what do people tell you, and you might have discovered the same thing, Trump's a totally different person one-on-one.
Oh, yeah.
He's charming.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
He asks about you. So for people who say he's a narcissist, the first thing he'll say is, oh, is your mom out there?
He'll remember
can you come in here? He's like, how are they treat you? You're doing a great job on Sunday.
But the majority of what you see are these rallies, because he does them constantly. And like you said, he'll get off script. He'll say things that are controversial that will get played over and over again. But you see him in a format like when he sat there with you guys on Fox and Friends, when he was on with Greg Gutfeld, when he's on with Rogan. If he's just sitting, have a conversation or off air too, he is a different person than when he's doing his rallies.
I think the other thing to keep in mind is who Trump is going against is frustrating. Number one, it's brand new. Number two, she has no track record that she wants to back up. If you want to run like you were in 2020, okay, let's go. But no, I don't. I do believe in fracking now. I do believe in criminalizing border crossings. I do want to focus now on my prosecution of transnational gangs from 2014. I do want to crack down on crime. Oh, Prop 36 is out to revamp
but
crime.
But she won't tell us, how she's going to vote on that California measure. So,
and then when it comes to transgenders in sports, I don't comment. And when it comes to illegal immigrants in prison that want to change genders, the taxpayers should pay for it. I don't really want to go over that. I'll enforce the law.
And that's the thing. This truncated, super quick, weird presidential election that we've had this year gives her the ability to kind of bob and weave and not commit on things where she doesn't feel like she needs to. She's been pressed a few times on some things, but I don't know that we've gotten a full explanation of her evolution on some of these things. And some of these positions that we're told she doesn't adhere to anymore, we haven't even heard that out of her mouth. We've heard it from staffers or people close to her or the campaign. So listen, if you want to run out the clock and try to be everything to everyone and talk about positive things that we all like, things that test well, like let's have prosperity, let's get prices down, let's bring the country together. I mean, that's the message both of these candidates should be doing.
So let's talk about, that's going to work. So we know about SNL, and we know that Kamala Harris, not only does she show up and do it and Trump not asked, but they basically say vote for her. And you have Maya Rudolph saying, I'm voting for us. Yes,
yeah.
I'm voting for us. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's not even like, wow, you put her on. That means you support her. Well, I don't know. No, it means it. So NBC is stepping up, and they offered the Trump campaign a slot on NASCAR race yesterday, and they took it. Isn't that interesting?
They realized
they were in trouble.
Yeah, I think because Lorne Michaels, you know, the brain trust behind SNL, said not that long ago, like, it's a problem for us if we don't invite all the candidates. We're probably not going to do it. It's kind of a mess. So he acknowledged publicly what this would potentially open up. And so it felt like they were going to sort of do like, all right, we might get a fine. We might get slap on the wrist, but it's worth it for us to help try to put her over the top. And we'll just let the chips fall where they may.
Well, I guess we'll see. We'll take a short time out, come back. We'll find out what Ed Shannon's going to be up to and when we're going to see her on television again, because any minute you're not on TV is just too many minutes without you on TV.
That's what my husband says.
Back in a moment.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Kamala Harris made the closing arguments in her campaign, delivering a speech with the White House in the background. And if you zoom in real close, you can see Joe Biden tied up inside. Also, during a Halloween event at the White House, President Biden playfully bit a baby who is dressed as a chicken. And then moments later, Commander finished the job.
SNL, that was Weekend Update. After you got cast at Cold Open, Shannon Bream with us now from Fox News Sunday. She's the anchor. So it was pretty crazy. The day after Joe Biden makes the ridiculous comments about about all the Trump supporters being garbage. He goes and has kids dressed up for Halloween and is biting their feet. I mean, come on. And then we know what he said the other day.
Right. Smacking people on the rear. Yeah. But he used a different word.
Right.
The ASS word.
I mean, is it amazing what Dana Carvey take him to just show him to be? He's running the country still, Shannon.
That's the thing, is I think he, for a lot of people, he was out of their minds. They think he's out of his mind, some people, because he just kind of was out of sight, out of mind. After he dropped off the campaign trail, we're like, oh, yes, he is still with the nuclear codes and running the country and biting babies' legs, which I agree is kind of cute. But I feel like if Trump had a White House thing with a bunch of people coming through in costumes and he was biting babies on the legs, it would most definitely trigger a different headline.
Probably Republicans would have triggered the 25th Amendment. But we just go, you know what? Not only that, the vice
We've
president
seen enough.
Is even close. She's never told us, honestly, he's had meltdowns behind. We know it. Read the Wall Street Journal. You see these other reports.
Yeah.
Read the Bob Woodward book. Mm-hmm. He's totally lost it in front of donors and staffers. Mm-hmm. She's never come clean on that. We still don't know technically why she's the nominee. Mm-hmm. Is he really old? Because he says he's not. And obviously still angry. On the Senate races. Bernie Moreno in Ohio mm-hmm. looks like with a 1 point, it's within 1 point of Sherrod Brown, who's had the job since 2007. You got Dave McCormick and Casey. You have Sheehy and Tester and other contentious elections, Hovde, as well as Tammy Baldwin.
Mm-hmm.
Out of all of them, what is showing you outside Sheehy looks like he's up 6 points,
right.
Being pretty consistent. Out of those three, how do you expect them to go?
Well, Baldwin has had a pretty comfortable lead until recently, so you got to wonder if that race is as tight as it is. Pennsylvania, it's all tied up there, too. But
do you know Hovde has put $20 million of his own money in?
I know, yes. I mean, if you got it, you know. I mean, I met him, months ago where he was getting in, you know, really involved in this race and feeling very hopeful about it and just like kind of a sheer force of will, feeling like he would turn this thing around. It is definitely tightened, but I think that's probably the longest shot of the three. I think that both Moreno and McCormick have a chance at this point. I think it all depends on what the top of the ticket trickles down and impacts people. Incumbents are always going to have an advantage. That's just the way things are.
Here's what Bernie Moreno said yesterday. Made his money in cars. Mm-hmm. First time he's running for a race. Cup 46.
Look, Ohio's done with career politicians. This guy's been around for 50 years. He was a Russian studies major at Yale, elected office his whole life, has run 18 campaigns, has never worked in the private sector. I've been a business guy my whole life, Sean. We've got the momentum. We've got the wind at our back. We're working really hard. We've campaigned all over the state of Ohio. Look, your viewers can see his voting record. It's abysmal.
So I just think that Trump's supposed to win Ohio by 8. So I wonder if that brings Moreno across, because I think he does a solid job. It's not like you're saying, wow, he's a flawed candidate. I don't know.
Right.
Do you not like used cars? You know, do you not like cars?
Well, listen, it was hard to get your hands on him during COVID. The prices were up. But I do think that the Senate Republicans feel like they did a better job in putting together and recruiting candidates this time around. As much as, you know, President Trump wants to point to things in 2022, like it was the pro-lifers and it was abortion and all these things that hurt us, you know, his critics will say you backed some people who had a really tough time. You got them through the general, but they were just, you know, not going to be viable in the general elections. So this time around, Republicans are feeling better about who they put together for these Senate races.
I think there's no doubt about it, because you have Jamie Raskin on the record on Bill Maher on Friday night saying our main goal is to undo the Electoral College. We want to get rid of the filibuster.
He voted no in 2016.
Right.
And others. I mean, there were others. For as much as you want to talk about 2020, which was very chaotic, and I don't think the country wants any kind of repeat of that, Raskin voted no in 2016.
To ratify the election.
To ratify the electoral votes from
certain
states.
I ran this video the other night on One Nation. You have Joe Biden, then vice president, slamming the gavel down because he had so many objections to ratifying the Electoral College in 2016. Mm-hmm. And they see Paul Ryan laughing behind him. I think it was Tlaib that was up there just screaming.
Mm-hmm.
But Jamie Raskin was the one who didn't want to ratify it.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that if Trump wins this, he's going to be a problem again.
Well, they did do the Electoral Count Act, which really changes how you can object to what's happening there on the floor with these electoral votes. So it used to be that you had to have a senator and a House member who would come forward to say, like, okay, Pennsylvania, I object to the votes, whatever. Now you can have a much bigger grouping of senators and House members to actually mount a challenge. There are specific ways that you have to go to court for some of these challenges. So they really wanted to limit the chaos of what happened last time. But I had Senator Mark Kelly on yesterday. So he's talking about, how dangerous and bad Trump is for the country. So I said, well, does that mean that you will certify the electoral votes for him? And he said, yes, of course I will, because we'll do a peaceful transfer. But it begs the question with Democrats, if he really is an existential threat to the country, you think he's Hitler, you think he's fascist, how could you certify the electoral votes? It's either this language is overblown with him or, you know, it's not. You got to make a decision.
Well, I mean, that's how they're going to rationalize it if they don't go ahead and do it. And Nancy Pelosi wouldn't even mention his name. I mean, and she's just going to get the House back. Now, have you got a sense of where the House is going? I mean, when they were swapping out speakers and not doing anything, I thought they're done.
Mm-hmm.
But that's really not the case now. Although Speaker Johnson came out earlier today and said we're being badly outspent.
Oh, big time. I mean, the Democrats have had much more successful fundraising on the House side. So that's been a real problem for them. You know, Cook Report, looking at the last kind of leaning D or R on these races, there are 7 in New York and about 10 in California, these two blue states that may actually decide what happens in the House. So those are the two House race states I'll be watching really closely. But remember, we didn't know where the House settled until December last time around. So you know, I mean, this could take some time.
Right. And Kevin McCarthy's no longer there, but it does look like they would do better by having Speaker Johnson speak to Kevin McCarthy. Evidently, they're not really working together at all, although you would argue that McCarthy's got so much money, not personally, but in his PAC.
Yeah, and it's been interesting because from the minute Johnson was sworn in, there were people like, he's not going to make it a week. He won't make it a month. He won't make it 6 months. I mean, he's a year into this now. He's proven to them that he is a great fundraiser, and he's been in dozens and dozens of cities and states. He's feeling very optimistic and bullish, but I don't know what else you would say publicly.
Shannon Bream, when do we see you again?
Outnumbered. I'll see you at 12 p.m. today, Eastern.
You really realize you're going to be with your rival, Brett Baer.
I know. But, you know, we're going to call a truce for an hour.
And you do it for the country.
I am doing everything I do for the country.
Everything you do is for the country?
Everything I do, I do it for the country.
Okay.
Brian Adams.
And then are you going to be part of the election coverage?
Yes, I'm actually leading all on the Fox broadcast. So wherever you watch your football games, the main broadcast channel, I will be with you all night and into the wee hours of the day.
Are you ready?
Ready as I'm going to be.
I know you're ready. Shannon Bream does a fantastic job. Shannon, thanks so much. We appreciate it. I can't wait to get this whole thing started. Get started already.
And over.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
In one of the most consequential elections of our lifetime, and we have momentum. It is on our side. Can you feel it?
It's just the opposite. We're hundreds of thousands of votes ahead. Nope, this has never happened.
And Trump definitely has a connection with voters here in Pennsylvania, and that's why it's going to be close.
What's their biggest concern right now if you're the Harris team?
Republicans do have an advantage in early vote numbers. It's going to look a little bit different than 2020, and that's scary.
The only fact we know is that the Republicans have done a lot better in the mail-in and early voting than they ever have.
At the very end, we find a tie nationally, 49% for Harris, 49% for Trump.
And there you go. That's why it is so close, too close to call. And there's a lot of those voices you recognize that have not come out. The only person that came out and said Harris will definitely win is James Carville. And he's getting so angry that people are challenging him on it. And it's not so much that David Plouffe doesn't think so, or Jim Messina, or Barack Obama. They just know it's too close. If you came out and said, we're going to win, it's cheerleading. Does anyone want a cheerleader now? Does anyone want to go, oh, Trump can't lose? Well, that's not true. Trump can't win? That's not true. So today, Donald Trump is delivering remarks starting now in North Carolina. I hope he's running on time because at 2 a.m. he's got a little raspy voice. Then he's going to be in Reading, Pennsylvania. That's at 2 o'clock, a little bit of time built in there. 4 hours later, he's going to be in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And then 10:30, Trump delivers remarks at a rally in Grand Rapids. And that'll be it. Harris will deliver remarks at a campaign rally in Allentown, Pennsylvania at 2:10. 8 o'clock, she'll be at delivering remarks in Pittsburgh, and she's going to finish up at 11 o'clock in Philadelphia. Her running mate's going to be in Wisconsin for four events. For J.D. Vance, he's going to be in Wisconsin, Michigan, Georgia, and Pennsylvania. And we'll see. I mean, the fact that President Trump is going to North Carolina again, he knows he can't win without it, so he's making sure. But maybe the internals got him a little bit scared, you know. That to me is pretty significant. I don't know if you guys have heard, but Kathy Hochul made the front page of the New York Post. And basically it's governor and hate. Hochul, vote for GOP in New York. vote, if you vote for Republican in New York, you're anti-American and anti-woman. Well, one guy is certainly going to be voting Republican in New York, and his name is Congressman Mike Lawler. On the 17th District, you know that he is in a tough battle with Mondaire Jones. He upset him last cycle. Mike Lawler, welcome back. Are you anti-woman and anti-American?
Well, as the father of two young daughters and the husband of a wife, no. And it's just – it's so pathetic to listen to people like Kathy Hochul, who previously told New Yorkers who don't agree with her to move to Florida. You know, this last week, Joe Biden called Trump supporters garbage. Kathy Hochul yesterday saying if you support Republicans in New York, you're anti-American. It's disgraceful. It really is. And it really just tears at the fabric of this country. We have deep divides, stark differences on policy. Duke it out on policy. This continued effort to demean and belittle people who, you know, vote a certain way is really just – it's unconscionable. And it's why Kathy Hochul's approval ratings are in the toilet. This is someone who – is an absolute disaster on policy, whether it's the cashless bail system, congestion pricing. She has created a mess in New York. New York leads the nation in out-migration because people can't afford to live here. She's doing nothing to address those challenges and, you know, has focused most of her energy and efforts this year trying to defeat folks like me and flip these seats that we picked up 2 years ago.
Wasn't Mondaire Jones for defunding the police?
Mondaire Jones absolutely supported defunding the police, cashless bail, open borders. He wanted to give blanket amnesty to criminal aliens. He wanted to allow cop killers the right to vote from prison. This is not someone who is serious about addressing the challenges facing this country. Rather, he is focused on doing the bidding of AOC and the squad. He voted with them 97-98% of the time. He was rated the third most radical liberal in the United States Congress. He was endorsed by Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren previously. So this is not somebody who, you know, should be anywhere near Congress, let alone representing anybody in New York.
So right now, they basically the last poll that I saw, you have the better polls. It looks like you have a 49-44% lead. Money is pouring into your race. What has Speaker Johnson done to support you? I mean, that his majority really hangs on seats like yours.
Well, the total between both sides is going to be over $40 million spent on my race. It's going to be one of the most expensive in the country, in part because there's really only a handful of seats that are truly competitive and going to determine the outcome of control of Congress, mine being one of them. And Democrats know the only way they can take back the majority is through New York. Speaker Johnson has been terrific. He was here this past week campaigning for me on Halloween. We have the majority whip Tom Emmer coming in today. Steve Scalise and Elise Stefanik were here just a few weeks ago. So leadership understands how critical these New York seats are. It's why they've been barnstorming the congressional districts in New York, raising millions of dollars. CLF, the outside super PAC, has spent upwards of $13 million on my seat. So I feel very good about where we are. I think obviously we're in a good position. The public polls had us up 5. But we still got to get across the finish line. And if folks want to support us, they can text right. Mike to 85007.
So the early voting in New York, how would you characterize it? So far, we're getting some reports that the Democratic the people coming out to vote Democratic early has not been as strong as they thought.
No, not at all, including absentees. And, you know, we're looking at record early vote turnout. Republican enthusiasm is through the roof. Low propensity Republicans are coming out to vote early, which is obviously a big change from 2020. So, you know, I feel very good heading into tomorrow based on the early vote numbers that we saw after 9 days of early voting. I think we're in a very strong position. We expect record turnout tomorrow. And, you know, I think heading into election night, We're poised to have a big win and hold these seats in New York, which is really going to be critical to keeping the majority.
So through Thursday, there were 1.9 million votes cast in New York, including 701,000 in New York City. That wouldn't affect you. But so far, I know it's a little hyperbole, a little bit campaigning, but Republicans are heading the polls in greater numbers. They say for the first time since Reagan was running for office. And as you know, he took New York. According to Lisa Stefanik, that puts New York in play, let alone the House majority. Have you noticed a difference? What are you telling us internally you could share with our audience?
There's no question. There is strong enthusiasm among Republicans. We see it in low propensity Republican voters. Republicans came out at a higher clip in early voting than Democrats. So we feel very good. Obviously, you look at a state like Pennsylvania. 8 years ago, Democrats outnumbered Republicans by over a million voters in Pennsylvania. That's now down to less than 300,000. In terms of voter registration by party. So Republicans are certainly coming out, engaged in the process. I think more people have moved to the right. I think we're going to see tomorrow in a district like mine, where I have one of the largest Jewish populations in America, a significant movement among the Jewish community to the right, the Latino community, 19% of my district Latino. So I think we're going to do very, very well tomorrow night. And I do believe Donald Trump will be elected the next president of the United States.
Congressman Mike Lauer, our guest. Congressman, in all candidate, did we hear different stories about whether that comedian at Madison Square Garden hurt the Hispanic turnout or Puerto Rican turnout or flipped them to vote for somebody else? Your reaction?
Look, that comedian made a really dumb joke that obviously was not even funny. But the fact is, I think most people are focused on the substance of these issues. I did a Latino town hall this week, and nearly every single person was talking to me about the cost of rent, the cost of groceries, the job market, small business support. People are focused on providing for their families, making sure their children have a quality education, making sure they have access to housing and health care, and that they live in safe neighborhoods. That is the primary driver of this election. We've seen the disaster that is Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, what they've allowed to happen to our economy, what they've allowed to happen at our southern border, what they've allowed to happen around the globe. The world is a tinderbox because of the foreign policy that they have enacted. And I think ultimately, regardless of your race, your ethnicity, your religion, your party affiliation, I think Americans are going to go to the polls tomorrow and make it very clear that they do not support these radical policies.
And Congressman, here's the thing, the difference from 2 years ago. Now, there was defund the police. There was a big push for Black Lives Matter, vaccine mandates, school closures. We had lockdowns. Everyone was for reducing greenhouse gas emissions, for the electric car. No big deal about the border unless you're a Republican. Crime was not a big issue. But now everything has flipped in 2 years. You got Mondaire Jones doing ads with cops saying I made a defund the police statement when I was much younger. Now nobody's talking about lockdowns. They're not talking about green emissions. They're not talking about electric cars. They've changed their approach. They're actually talking about tax cuts for small businesses. I mean, that is not the wide open borders. America's a terrible place. Let's make 1619 Project our new social studies curriculum. Have you noticed you're running against a different type of party?
Oh, there's no question. They have tried to, rebrand themselves as Republican light on so many of these issues, from the border to crime and public safety to the economy. And the funny part about it, though, is I don't think voters buy it. I think we have so much tape of them saying they support defunding the police. They support open borders. They're against the border wall. They're against criminal aliens being deported. They want cops and rapists to be able to vote from prison. I mean, Mondaire Jones called all cops racist and white supremacy, called ICE agents terrorists. So no matter what they say today, I think the fact is voters recognize that what they said in 2020 is what they really believe. When Kamala Harris is reversing herself on all these different positions, including banning natural gas, nobody believes it because they realize she's only saying that now because she realizes it's deeply unpopular, not because she actually doesn't believe in the issue or that she recognizes she was wrong. You won't hear her say, "I was wrong." She'll just say, "Oh, no, I'm not going to ban it."
Congressman, do you realize, too, I'm sure you realize how you could frack in New York if the environmentalists would just back out and allow you guys to do it? It would revitalize all of New York State in desperate need of industry.
No question. And by the way, it impacts everything. The fact is, New York has a disastrous energy policy. Utility bills have skyrocketed because of New York's energy policy. They shut down Indian Point. They block natural gas. They block pipelines. They mandate all electric vehicles. They mandate all new construction be electric. It is basically costing trillions of dollars across the country with these policies, and it is not producing the level of energy that we need. It is making manufacturing, construction, and the cost of goods skyrocket.
All right. He is up by 4, according to the latest polling. But he goes, could go the power in the House. Congressman Mike Lawler, best of luck to see if you can go 2 for 2.
Thanks, Brian. Appreciate it.
You got it. Listen, when we come back, your calls for the first time, 1-866-408-7669. What are you looking for? What are you looking for right now in this election to find out which way it'll go? And, of course, your prediction. Bottom of the hour, Karl Rove weighs in. He's been poring over the numbers. He's had some issues with Donald Trump, obviously, but he's pulling for the Republican, clearly. Also, his former boss, George W. Bush, is getting some heat. I'll tell you why, and who's sticking up for him might surprise you. You are listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. SNL, everyone's focused on the cold open. I didn't think it was good. I mean, to me, they stole from Jimmy Fallon and Donald Trump the whole mirror concept. And the whole concept, too, of them, Maya Rudolph, it's very similar to Kate McKinnon and Hillary Clinton, Maya Rudolph and Kamala Harris. Harris is, you know, it's good that she got free publicity, no hard questions. So good luck with that. But the next week, as they wrote up, Kate McKinnon was singing Hallelujah, literally on the piano because they were in mourning because Trump won. See if they have the same luck. Another sketch on SNL was worth going over. Kind of funny. Harvey Epstein is running for state assemblyman, and they call it the most unfortunate name in America. Listen.
Hi, I'm Harvey Epstein, and I'm running for City Council of New York City. This is a real thing. Look, is my name ideal? Of course not. I share names with two of the most notorious sex perverts of all time. You think I don't know that? But thankfully, I'm a different guy. But I'm not gonna lie. The name thing has become a bit of an issue. Harvey, I could almost handle, but Epstein, this thing is an albatross. Think of it this way, though. If my names are this bad, and I'm still running for public office, think how much better I'd have to be than everybody else, right?
New Yorkers agree. They want someone representing them like Harvey Epstein.
He's got my vote. Everyone deserves a second chance.
I'm still on my first chance.
Plus, I think it's cool he knows a lot of famous people.
I don't. I'm a state assemblyman.
Even Hillary couldn't kill this guy. Good for him. He's a survivor.
Again, I'm a different guy. But look, I love this city and its working people. When the Mohawk Valley miners went on strike, Epstein had their back.
Because Epstein looks out for minors.
M-I-N-E-R-S. That is an important distinction. Please.
He'll be great for the economy. Do I want him running our schools? Probably not.
I can run the schools, and I love your children. Not in a creepy way. I give you my word as an Epstein.
Harvey Epstein for city council. Because together we can make this city Epstein's Island.
Let's not call it that, maybe.
So he is a state assemblyman who's running for New York City Council. So that's hysterical. That is
Isn't
really
that
funny. Yeah. Do you think it helps him to run like that? Helps him, right?
He definitely got his 15 minutes of fame. He commented about it. He's like, I went to bed on Saturday, woke up Sunday morning, and my phone blew up. I mean, who heard of this race prior to the sketch?
But how about this? You know, so yeah, I mentioned Maya Rudolph. Yeah, I got that right.
Yep.
All of a sudden, it sounds weird. Like, I'm thinking Wilmer Rudolph, the sprinter. And then, you know, Tim Kaine was on, too. And he was the running mate of Hillary Clinton, and he was part of a game show. And people are like, are you kidding me? So people are already saying to yourself, are you trying to get a Democrat elected? And you bring in Tim Kaine, who's up in the Senate with Hung Cao against Hung Cao, who's probably the most impressive guy you're ever going to want to meet.
Who also has a fantastic name.
The best ever. Yes. And by the way, he came up before Trump in Virginia, and he gave a few remarks. He was great. Karl Rove next. Karl Rove really likes me, but his old boss, his name was brought up. Bill Clinton stuck up for George W. Bush. You're going to love this scenario. Karl Rove next.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
In one of the most consequential elections of our lifetime, and we have momentum. It is on our side. Can you feel it? And we have the momentum because our campaign is tapping into the ambitions, the aspirations, and the dreams of the American people. Because we are optimistic and excited about what we can do together.
Whatever that means. She's not bringing up Trump's name in the final 2 days, but man, did she bring it up over the final 2 months. Karl Rove joins us now. He used to be the deputy chief of staff for George W. Bush, Fox News contributor, best-selling author. Karl,
did I used to be the last two, or am I still the last two? Fox News and best-selling author.
Yeah, that's true. I should have disseminated. I would say used to be, because when George Bush left, you left. And exactly. senior advisor there. But Fox News contributor always. I know it was helping us out. Karl, I was riveted last night. It was a great panel. You, Alex Castellanos, and Mark Penn.
Yeah, CPR. Panel.
You know why? Because
Castellanos, Penn, and Rove.
I know. I would definitely pay you a retainer.
Yeah.
How about this? I think I saw three people trying to think it out in real time, playing off each other, as opposed to, I got something to say. Because even the smartest people, the most experienced people, are really having trouble telling us what's going to happen. Where do you stand today?
Well, it's a coin toss, and that's why it's so difficult to describe what the outcome is going to be. Because think about this. I'm sort of a nerd, as you know.
I know. So I see you drawing something in the hall.
You know, I have a little piece of blue paper I fill out every morning, and I track the Real Clear Politics average, the 538 average, and the Silver Bulletin average.
538, that's what Nate Silver left.
Yeah, he created it. He sold it to ABC, left, and created Silver Bulletin. So they have slightly different formulas. Real Clear Politics takes the polls and average, just dumps them in there and averages them. Real Clear Politics is the only one that does it. 538 and Silver and Nate Silver both apply formulas to it. For example, they take into account, they give greater weight to surveys which have a smaller inbred bias. You can tell, you can look at polls over time and say this poll tends to be more Democrat or this tends to be more Republican. So they adjust for that. They adjust for the size of the sample. There are other parts of their formulas. These are not simple, you know, A plus B plus C formulas. So they adjust it a little bit. And so I chart these down every day. And I chart the national number and then the seven battleground state numbers. So on the battleground states, I've got 21 numbers, three aggregators times seven states. So I got 21 numbers. But remember, that number represents between 8 and 10 and 12 surveys. And so the sample size is, you know, 6,000 or 12,000 or 10,000. So it's a big sample size. And then I chart it. I put those down. I am a complete nerd. So I put the states where Trump is ahead are in red ink, the ones where she's ahead are in blue ink. But then I also look at the trend. For example, Arizona today in Real Clear Politics was 2.5% lead for Trump. That's down 0.4% from yesterday. In 538, it's 2.5% as well. No change from its previous number. It's 1.6 in Silver Bulletin, which is down 0.5% from the last time he did this yesterday. So I measure that. So I look at this and I find out Trump is ahead today in all three of those averages in states that give him 287 electoral votes and give her 251. However, There are only two out of the 21 instances where the lead is 2 points or more. There are eight where the lead is between 1 to 1.9, and there are 11 where the lead is less than a percentage point. And then if you look at the change from yesterday, it is Trump up 4, unchanged 4, and Harris up 13. So, you know, it gives me a sense of the movement, and I've been doing this for, you know, weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And so here at the end, there's been a, you know, sort of at the beginning of this past week, at the end of last weekend, hence, Trump tended to be up more than she was. And now since last Monday, she's been up more than he is in these. And this thing is tight as a tick.
Okay. Are they doing anything over the last 4 or 5 days to move those numbers?
Well,
let's start with Harris.
Yeah. Well, she's trying to end on a, you know, she's pitched at, well, let's step back. Who are they after? You know, there are two ways of looking at this.
I'm trying to max out the males for Trump, or am I trying to get some females for Trump, and vice versa?
Well, or let's put it just slightly different way. I'm trying to max out all the people who are already for me, keep them revved up and getting out to vote. It's base only. The other way is there are only 5% or 6% or 7% who are undecided or weakly linked to their choice or trying to make up their mind whether or not they're going to vote. So at the same time that I'm keeping my base revved up, I'm trying to reach out to that group of people. She's doing more of that than he is. He understands his advertising is really good, and he's clearly in the advertising reaching out for people who today are not for him. But in his speeches, he's reaching out only to the people who are for him. And the problem is television ads in a presidential race are different than television ads in probably any other campaign. They're basically wallpaper unless the presidential candidate is emphasizing the same themes and tone of those ads.
The one thing I did notice, Carl, number one, it's much longer than any other presidential candidate will ever see, probably ever again. But I do notice he will talk for an hour and a half, hour.
Yeah.
Three quarters of it is fine. And they'll have one quarter where he says, "What's going on with the media?" or "What's going on over here?" And she's just not bright. And she's low. I'm thinking to myself, "Okay, that's got to drive the Chris Lacevitas and the Susie Wiles wild."
Exactly. Because look, that's what's going to get covered.
But if it's a heavy, you could be 20 minutes in and out and just read the same speech over and over again.
Yeah. Well, or he could think about what is it that I'm going to say each day that I want to have be the message of that day. The dominant message, so that the press really can't, you know, I'm not going to say the crazy stuff that's going to give them an excuse. You know, they're eating the cats, they're eating the dogs. You know, don't give them a chance to do that. But each day, you know, build on this message that the country's in a bad shape and he can turn it back.
So much has changed too about the way we do these elections, but I want to just take a step back. So we know that Barbara Bush, one of George Bush's twin daughters, came out and said, "I'm voting for the other side." I imagine Jenna the same thing. I don't know if she said it. The host at Today Show.
I'm definitely not going to be the spokesperson for Barbara Jenner Bush.
True, but Barbara came out and said it. She wanted everyone to know it. Yeah. But I imagine Jenna the same way.
I'm not certain of that, and I'm not going to. Okay. I don't think it's worth speculating on that.
Okay. But George W. Bush, who no one likes him more than you, but I have unbelievable amount of respect for him. He just wants to stay out of it.
Yeah.
But Bill Clinton defended him yesterday, and he said, "Look, he's going to bat for his Republicans, and he's really going to bat hard for different Senate candidates. But he's out of politics." If I could just paraphrase, and I just loved it because number one, you know, he beat his dad, right? And then after that, he takes over for Bill, right?
Yeah.
And then he goes against his wife.
Yeah.
So if anyone should have bitterness, it should be the Bushes and Clinton should hate each other.
Yeah.
But tell me the reality.
They both were there. I mean, there's something about being in that place for 8 years that causes you to understand the demands it places on anybody and to have a certain amount of sympathy for somebody who has either had the job or wants the job and gets the job.
Because W wants to stay out of it. Now he's a bad guy?
Yeah.
I mean, how dare you? He should have came out against Trump. Why? Because I'll tell you, and you know better, but his dad died, his mom died, and Trump's went out of his way to make sure they got the Blair House and other things, and they kind of made amends.
Yeah.
So why would he go back? Why would Trump take, you know?
Well, also, look, and again, I hesitate. I'm not speaking for him, but he has said that he believes, as a former president, that the country deserves to have a lower profile from him.
Yeah.
And look, behind the scenes, he's been encouraging people to seek office because he wants good people to run, and he's showing up at fundraisers in Dallas, and he's people come through town to talk to him. In fact, his main complaint is nobody comes to see me because they think I'm too busy. But, you know, isn't it refreshing to have somebody who says, I don't need to be in the limelight?
And Bill Clinton says, President Bush has indeed moved on from presidential politics, but he has been working quietly and diligently to keep the Senate and GOP control. This is a Democrat who has to be a surrogate for Harris, and he's going about for a W.
Exactly.
And I just think, and remember, Gerald Ford and Jimmy Carter got along?
Yeah.
Right? After Jimmy Carter, you know, squeaks out and it bothered, he only served 2.5 years Ford. I mean, George H.W. Bush had a problem. He only served four.
Yeah.
I did not know it ate at him until those tapes came up.
Yeah.
And then after 2.5 years, Ford is out and Jimmy Carter beats him and they end up being friends.
Yeah.
So I think it's a great message to the country. That's the way it used to be.
Can I tell you a story?
Yeah.
So I get a call. They say 41 is fading. He'd like to see you. Can you come? So I drive to Houston. And remember, I went to work for him when I was 22. Set the arc of my life. So I go to see him, and we're sitting in his library. They said, be there about 4 o'clock. He's in good shape late afternoon. About 5, he has dinner, so you'll have a good hour. So we sat there talking. He loved gossip, political gossip. The more salacious, the better. So I went armed with some gossip, and we were having a wonderful conversation. And out of the blue, he says, you know, we're sitting in his library. He says, nobody wants my books. Nobody. I tried to give them to my library. They didn't want them. I tried to give them to A&M, where the university where his library is, and they didn't want them. You want a book? And I said, well, sure, I'd love one of your books. And I thought he'd say, go pick one out. He said, well, I want to think about it. So we have a wonderful visit, terrific visit. The end of the hour comes.
Still had it together, right?
Oh, yeah.
He had Parkinson's towards the end?
Well, he had a variety of things, but his mind was sharp and his spirit was great. His body was fading. And it was getting to the end of the hour and time for him to go have dinner. So I literally walked out and wept. And a few days later, he passes. And a day or two after that, a package arrives at my house.
Wow.
It's a book. It's a book published in the year of his birth, 1926, I guess it is, Our American Presidents, has a biography of every president up through and including Calvin Coolidge. And it's not particularly great history, but the book is in great shape for having been that old. And inscribed in the front of it is a note to George on your 90th birthday with gratitude for your friendship and for your grand service to our country, Bill. It is Bill Clinton's 90th birthday gift to George H.W. Bush.
Wow.
And that's what he wanted to send me.
Yeah, that is awesome.
Yeah.
What a piece of history there.
What a piece of history.
So it was like an anthology, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Just
Every biography and pictures of every president and from George Washington to Calvin Coolidge. And anyway, it was emblematic of what a thoughtful person he was right up to the end, and what a great grandman.
Well, the whole family, like, he was holding the thank you notes and the letters.
Yeah,
it's like I've gotten 3 letters from George W. Bush. Number one, I called the last T-ball game with Tim McCarver.
Yeah.
And he sent me a note. Thanks for calling, as if it was a problem. Like, he goes, thanks so much for coming down and doing the play-by-play of my T-ball game with a bunch of 6-year-olds in the white. And we got pictures or everything. And I think I told you the story. My daughter, Katie, who's now in college, was 7. And it was 110 degrees. She's like, why are we here? We don't know these people. Like, she's a little kid. Just started, where are we here? He goes, the president of the United States is going to be here. He goes, I wonder if he's going to remember me. And so Dawn and me, and we're sitting, what do you mean? He goes, when we were there, we were in the White House. Brad Blakeman was bringing us through. And out of nowhere, we thought out of nowhere, he didn't know, chopper lands. And he got back from a G7. Mm-hmm. So we go, you got to get out of the Oval Office. We're in the Oval Office. So we got out. President goes in. So we get back in the Oval Office. We're touring through, and he gets his clubs. And he just starts putting in the back lawn. So we're allowed to stay. So I go, is he playing golf? So he's sitting there. He's not near us. So out of nowhere, he sees us on the patio, and he waves to us. And my daughter, who's 6 at the time, 5, waves. She swore he was looking right at him. So he goes, I wonder if he's going to remember when we met last time, when he met her, he waved at me. And we're like, oh my goodness, she thinks he waved right at her. Well, you had a staffer overhearing this whole thing. I don't know who it was. Tells the president, by the time he comes over, it's literally 110 degrees of waiting. He comes over, he walks right to Katie and goes, I remember when you were waving to me on the patio.
Oh, fabulous.
And she goes, I told you. So think about that.
Well, here's the scary thing. He might have remembered. I mean, he has an incredible memory for that kind of thing.
Right. And they took it. But it was just, and yeah. We saw the picture the other day. But then, sure enough, you get the thank you notes. I mean, that thoughtfulness, you get to put that in your.
I was on an airplane. I was 26 years old. We're flying from someplace, I guess, in Iowa to Minneapolis, Minnesota. And I'm sitting next to George H.W. I'm the executive director of the pre-presidential PAC. The Fund for Limited Government, and he's out campaigning for candidates in the 78 midterms in order to get credits for running for president, and he's writing thank you notes, and I made some comment about, why do you do that all the time? And he said the two greatest words in the English language that are most left unsaid most often is thank you.
Nice.
And he said, you ought to take up that habit too, and I do it to this day. I write thank you notes all the time.
Back in a moment.
Educating, entertaining, enlightening. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
So, Carl Rove's our guest. And, Carl, we got a few more minutes together. So the president of the United States, if you can look at their trail and see where they're going today. So Trump's open up now in North Carolina. He's going over to Reading, Pennsylvania, then Pittsburgh, then ends in Grand Rapids. And then we look at Harris is going to be in Allentown at 2 o'clock, Pittsburgh. It looks like 8 o'clock. I'm not good at military time. And then at 11 o'clock, Philadelphia. Your reaction to what they're doing? I mean,
well, clearly Pennsylvania is it. Whoever wins Pennsylvania likely wins the election, and then he wants to press her in Michigan. So he's going to Grand Rapids, Kent County on the western side of the state. It's a county that went for him once and went against him once. And so he's going to go over there and try and put an extra pressure on her. It's interesting to see the last couple of days. It was what you might expect with two or maybe two and a half glaring exceptions. He spent one of the valuable moments that he had in Salem, Virginia, and another one in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Why do you think?
Well, either one of two things. Either they wanted to sort of head fake the other side and say, we feel really, really good about expanding the map, or they actually felt that he could expand the map. And they sent last night the vice presidential candidate to New Hampshire. Now, I don't think New Hampshire, Virginia, and New Mexico are in play. But maybe they have data that says it is.
Chris Sununu was here a month ago and said, I wish they kept force more infrastructure in Pennsylvania, in New Hampshire, because it's absolutely gettable.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm wondering, too, is they said there's been so little polling on all these states besides the seven that you don't know about New Hampshire, Virginia, New Mexico, and maybe Kansas.
Well, we do have some polling because we have congressional district polling. Texas, we have Senate polling, for example. New Mexico, we've got Senate polling. So there are ancillary ways to identify whether or not the state
is. Rapid fire. Ted Cruz in trouble?
He'll win.
What about Tim Sheehy?
He absolutely will win.
Bernie Moreno?
Depends on how big Trump's margin is in the state. If it's eight or more.
Eight plus. And then you have Dave McCormick.
Best candidate we have on the field, and if Trump is close or wins, he wins.
Do you believe it's a 5-point race right now, as New York Times Siena says?
I don't.
Closer.
Think about this. Pennsylvania, if you go back to where we started, my little blue sheet, if you take a look at Pennsylvania, it is the closest of all the states. They show 0.1%, 0.3%, and 0.4%.
Carl Rove, you're the best. Candidates. We'll talk to you again and again.
All right. All the best.
Yeah.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
In one of the most consequential elections of our lifetime, and we have momentum. It is on our side. Can you feel it?
It's just the opposite. We're hundreds of thousands of votes ahead. Nope, this has never happened.
And Trump definitely has a connection with voters here in Pennsylvania, and that's why it's going to be close.
What's their biggest concern right now if you're the Harris team?
Republicans do have an advantage in early vote numbers. It's going to look a little bit different than 2020, and that's scary.
The only fact we know is that the Republicans have done a lot better in the mail-in and early voting than they ever have.
At the very end, we find a tie nationally, 49% for Harris, 49% for Trump.
A lot going on. I love these montages that Eric, Allison, and Pete put together just to, like, set the tone, because there's really one story. I like to give you the top three, and then I agonize over because there's really five or seven. There's really one, and there's different sides to that story. Michael Goodwin will break it down in the big picture, New York Post columnist, a former New York Times writer. We'll talk about the push on endorsements. I mean, today, I think they got – yesterday, John Bon Jovi – I mean, who cares who they're voting for? And if I have to get a legendary rock star to open up for me in order to get people, it's such an insult. I'd rather take a smaller venue. Selena Zito joins us now, nationally syndicated columnist. Of course, she was there. One of the things that I'll always remember, Selena Zito was there when the president was shot. She was supposed to interview him right after, and she ended up getting the first interview right after that. She's got two columns out. Trump has reason in Pennsylvania to feel better than Harris. Not saying it's locked up. Also, look at Dave McCormick's chances. He is an excellent candidate. You heard Karl Rove last hour to come out and say he is by far the strongest candidate in the field. Selena Zito, welcome back.
Thanks so much for having me.
I know. We're watching the President of the United States in his first appearance today. He's in Raleigh, North Carolina. He's going to have two more. He's talking about the border, and he's talking about Mexico and talking about trade. I hope he stays to the script and stays to the message just to lock it up, because every thousand counts. Remember, last election, 45,000 votes in battleground states was the difference, Selena. Do you think you talk to him a lot. Do you think he's fully cognizant of how close this could be?
Oh, yeah. I definitely think he's well aware of everything is on the line. And he knows that, you know, this is going to be a nail biter unless everything we know about polling is wrong, and that also might be the case. So, you know, this is, he knows it's a nail biter. He knows the importance of being on message, and he knows the importance of inspiring people where they are on the issues that matter the most. And that is, I mean, it shows in poll after survey after survey that the economy, followed by issues at the border, are the number one and number two reasons. Now, I try to stay away from polling. I think everybody's brain broke on Friday when Ann Seltzer released her Iowa poll. But, you know, the polling, the surveys I try to sort of keep my brain on while I'm reporting and seeing how it matches up is Gallup. And, you know, the right track, wrong track. Is the country going in the right direction? Like, overwhelmingly, people believe that the country is going in the wrong direction, not by 50%.
Well,
like,
yeah.
I think, yeah, it's huge. It's almost everyone. And then the economy and immigration are the top two reasons why they believe that. So that has made me, along with the reporting I do, and I know it's anecdotal, but I try to stick to the places where it's going to matter. You know, I would give Trump an edge in Pennsylvania.
So that's key, Selena, because you're not saying no guarantee would you give him an edge, but no one's really seen more of Pennsylvania than you. You've been writing about it for the longest time for the Washington Examiner, covering it and offering insight to us. But for Trump, he's going to end up going back there today to Pittsburgh, and he's also going to be in Reading, Pennsylvania. What does he get out of Reading? What is he worried about there? That's the next stop.
Well, Reading is really important because you need to turn out the small counties. You need enthusiasm in Berks, in Northampton, in Lehigh Valley. That sort of is that area right there in Bucks County. And so that's why he's there. It's all about showing a connection to place and people. So that's why you go to Reading, not just Pittsburgh. And Pittsburgh is about the people in Allegheny County suburbs, which are much redder than the city of Pittsburgh. Now, they did go away from from Republicans in 2018 and 2020, but last year in an off-year election, they came back home. You want those margins. He is going for margins.
No, that's true, and it's going to be close. Now, what do you think, what is your best estimate of when Pennsylvania can produce a result?
Well, I guess I'm going to be like Pollyanna about it, and say maybe 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, sort of where we were in 2016. Here's what I would tell people to watch on election night that will give you an idea of where it's going. Keep an eye on what number comes in from Philadelphia from the mail-in ballots. If it's over 130, 140, 150, if it gets over that in mail-in ballots, then she might have a good night. But also watch Erie County, Northampton County, Luzerne County, Cambria County. See what the turnout is there in those counties for Republican. They're going to likely go for Trump, but they needed to draw out about 1,000 more votes over 2020.
Very interesting to see where this goes. Do you think, in talking to the president, where do you think his mindset is right now?
Oh, I think he's very focused, very excited. I might get a chance to talk to him today. I haven't gotten official word yet, but if I do, I'll know immediately. I'll make sure I tweet it out. And I suspect, knowing him, he's probably in a good place.
So far, about the early voting, some takeaways. This from the Trump camp. Harris is in trouble, not just with male voters, but she's also getting the early vote totals with female voters. She needs to win. She's not getting, she said. Harris is even more trouble with African-Americans and urban voters, not just because of low turnout, but also because Trump is performing historically well so far, what they're seeing. She's being squeezed at both ends. Rural voters is through the roof. That benefits Trump. Early absentee voting is way off for Democrats. I've heard this, meaning they're now hoping voters who haven't voted in person on Election Day or at least 8 years for 8 years to do so. Good luck with that. And finally, President Trump's strategy of targeting low and mid propensity voters during turning them out in early is paying off. And that would go to a ground game that's basically been licensed out, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, unless there is a magic school bus that shows up and drags bodies out in Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, then he's going to have a good night. And there might be. You know, we don't, I mean, there's always, what was the famous Rumsfeld quote, known unknowns?
Yeah.
I feel like we're in that moment right now.
On Georgia, one of the camp staffers wrote me and says, I ask, what's the worst news? What's the best news that you have? Says at the end, the election is usually 52-53% female. So the early voting percentage holds. It could be a problem for Trump. The problem with all these early voting analysis is, and try to follow this, is that Dems and Republicans are both changing their voting behavior. Says we don't usually bank this many early voters, meaning Republicans, meaning they he's a Republican. And they, meaning Democrats, don't usually have this many reliable Democrats. Wait until Election Day. It is hard to predict. So this is why everyone's changing behaviors. And that's why, you know, the thing is, as you know, Selena, people's reputations are on the line. This is what they do. And if they're off, they're going to have trouble staying in business.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think at the end of the day, so if there is this turnout with women and Trump wins it, I think what we end up diving into is maybe there wasn't a gender gap. Maybe the thing is that there is a marriage gap with women and how they
are
voting.
What do you mean by that?
That you will see more women that are married with children or home with children voting for Trump and more women that are single and don't have children voting for Harris. So it becomes not a gender gap per se, but a marriage gap with women.
Interesting. So when you had those comments from the comedian last Sunday and they said about Puerto Rican being an island of garbage, and then that got quickly reversed when Joe Biden made everything worse like he always does and says that's what I call Trump supporters. I'm just paraphrasing. So did that matter to the Puerto Rican Hispanic population of Pennsylvania, anecdotally, that you could tell?
Not really. There was, I mean, my profession tries to make things happen. And I'm sure there is, you know, some people that it did matter. But, you know, I went to that rally in Allentown. I didn't go in. I was just outside. I saw a protest of about maybe a dozen or two people protesting against Trump. But they were calling themselves Latinx. So that made me think, where are they?
Nobody does that. Nobody does that.
Yeah, that set off red flags for me because I'm like, where exactly are you from? Because that's not a traditional self-identification for Latinos. And so I was quite skeptical of that event.
So Nikki Haley put an editorial in the Wall Street Journal, and it came out last night, but it really hit today. And she says, Trump isn't perfect, but he's the better choice. And that's the headline. It said, I don't agree with Mr. Trump 100% of the time, but I do agree with him most of the time. And I disagree with Harris all the time. On foreign policy, the Harris-Biden agenda has made the world far more dangerous. On our southern border, our pressing security threat, Biden and Harris have made it dramatically worse. Their debacle in Afghanistan not only created a new terrorist state, also signaled weakness and sparked the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And a Trump administration would be different. It wouldn't be perfect, but I agree with Trump that we need to keep taxes low and cut them more. I agree that we need to roll back trillions of dollars in special interest handouts. And she goes on. It was brilliantly written, well done, right to the point, not flowery, not PR, not written by a marketing person. You could see her doing it herself. Does this help?
I was in Allegheny County, northern Allegheny County suburb, which is supposed to be solid, you know, Democrat now. And she was there for Dave McCormick. And I have to tell you, she drew and McCormick drew a massive crowd.
Wow.
And I mean, I tweeted this. I'm like, this event is bonkers. I had, you know, very little surprises me in American politics, and that one surprised me. And there were hesitant Trump voters there who are voting for him in a large part because of how she robustly supported him at that event. And I think that these are the kinds of things that might make a difference tomorrow. You know, those suburbs, he is not going to win Allegheny County. However, again, it's about the margins. Making a dent in Allegheny right. County is incredibly important.
So Axios wrote a story today at the VP. This is the no comment candidate. So here you have, if you want to be tough on crime, you have an opportunity. Proposition 36 out in California, where she votes, they have an initiative that would make crime of shoplifting a felony for repeated offenders, increase penalties for some drug charges, including those involved with opioid fentanyl. It also would give judges the authority to order people with multiple drug charges to get treatment. Proponents say the initiative is necessary to close loopholes in existing laws. So if you want to be tough on crime, you come out and say, you know, I voted for this. I've been in California years, but I want to see them crack down on crime. I've changed. Whatever. She says no comment. I don't want to get behind a proposal either way. Isn't that typical of her? Same thing with transgenders in prison. Should you pay for that? Should taxpayers pay for that gender change? And she said yes. Now she says, I'll follow the law. How can you get elected president and not take a position on anything?
That's been the thesis of her entire campaign. Maybe it works, but I'm cautious that it does work. I don't, people are in a very sort of teetering moment in terms of trusting government, trusting institutions, but also just really exhausted by the spending that has led to the economic despair that a lot of people feel. You know, that's brushed off by people that don't have to, you know, look at their credit card when they pay their grocery bill, but people are we are in the most highest credit card debt in our country because a lot of people had to buy their groceries on their credit card because they couldn't afford it out of their family budget.
Lastly, your prediction on why, if the theory is if Trump wins, McCormick wins, but McCormick doesn't win without Trump. Do you subscribe to that, Selena Zito?
They are intrinsically connected. He helps. One helps with the suburban vote. The other one helps with the rural vote. It's hard to imagine, however, not impossible to imagine McCormick winning and Trump not. Look, Pennsylvania is famous for splitting its vote. I mean, we voted for Rick Santorum and Al Gore.
There you
okay,
go.
So just so people remember that. And in 2020, despite the fact that Donald Trump lost by 80,000 votes in Pennsylvania, please, everyone, remember, Republicans had historic gains in the state house. They won 2 out of 3 statewide elections, and they had they kept their the state the congressional delegation intact.
Selena Zito, thanks so much. It'd be great, interesting. Hope you get that interview back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
After the Dodgers won the World Series, violence broke out in Los Angeles and a Nike store got looted. That is just disgusting. Yankee fans would never steal sporting goods unless it was during the game.
That is so true, because it happened to Mookie Betts. When you see these guys reach in when he goes over a wall to catch a ball, they literally opened up his mitt and took the ball. I have never seen that in my life. And here's the craziest thing. Rob Gronkowski went to high school with him. He happened to be watching the game and says, I know them, and all I can tell you is they're true to who they were. So whatever that means. I mean, I've talked to somebody and they said, oh, I love it. It's so New York. But can you imagine this guy got hurt? They bent his hand back or something like that? I mean, I was upset the day before because they hit a ball. It looked like it was going over. And you see this Dodger fan reach over and catch the ball before it hit the wall and just picked it up. And they go, double. And I'm thinking to myself, how do we know if that's a double? That might have hit over the wall. But that's what happens. Ground rule double. I think it's bad.
No, I agree. I agree with that. Lucky they didn't hurt the player. At the same time, wasn't that the moment where it turned the momentum of the game around?
No question. They were down 2-0 at the time, and the Yankees were showing no fire. Their fans showed more fire. I was at that game.
I know.
And I wasn't able to lean over and see it. It just disappeared. So when the guy emerged, I go, what is the problem? They wouldn't show it on the replay. And then they eventually did. And then the guy next to me says, yeah, take a look. I have it on my phone. It's insane. But the place did wake up. And I'll tell you, I was just stunned. I thought for sure they were going back, and I'm sure Fox would have loved that for Games 6 and 7. But they blew a 5-0 lead with their ace on the mound.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
If you're voting for these Republicans in New York, you're voting for someone who supports Donald Trump, and you're anti-woman, you're anti-abortion, and basically you're anti-American, because you have just trashed American values and what our country is all about over and over and over.
That is the governor of New York, who made national headlines for her idiocy. So if you vote Republican, you're anti-woman, you're anti-American. Michael Goodwin, you've heard a lot and you've been outraged by Governor Cuomo. But this is unbelievable. Governor Hochul, an accidental governor who no Democrat wants to campaign with her. Now she comes out with that idiotic statement. What's behind this?
You know, Brian, I wish I knew, because there's a kind of mindlessness about her. I mean, she is a terrible governor to start with. But on this issue about Republicans, she said something like this before back in 2022, that if you're a Republican, you don't belong in New York, get on the bus and go to Miami. And then at the Al Smith dinner, she goes over and shakes hands with Donald Trump, who's talking to Chuck Schumer. So what was that about? And then you come out with this. It's almost like she's just playing to different audiences. You know, she said this on MSNBC, and it's almost like she felt compelled to go along with the mob and hate Trump that night. Whereas at the Al Smith dinner, feeling everybody is sort of having a good time. Chuck Schumer and Trump are talking most of the night, and the humor is good, and everybody's laughing, and it's serious business. But and she goes over and says hello to Trump and shakes his hand because he said, I'll work with the mayor and the governor of New York, even though, you know, the attorney general is trying to bankrupt him and the Manhattan DA is trying to put him in prison. It was a magnanimous event for him, and she responded appropriately. And then she goes on MSNBC and says this. I mean, what is anti-American is to say this. That's what's anti-American, that you are now saying half the country is anti-American because they don't agree with your political philosophy. It's extraordinary. It is not in keeping with our best traditions. And as I say, this thing itself is anti-American. So I guess we can say New York Governor Kathy Hochul is anti-American.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And she's getting blowback and no help. I just was talking to Mike Lawler. It looks like he's up 4 points. Looking at the other races, Suozzi has taken the Santos seat, and it's going to be tough to unseat him. What about Garbarino and some others? Have you been able to look around and see if he's going to withstand the challenge?
Look, the individual races are all pretty close. I think the trend, from what I hear, is that Republicans will, you know, they picked up 5 seats the last time around, and that's what gave the National Republicans a House majority. Tom Suozzi took back one of those seats in the special election for Santos, and it looks to me like Democrats will probably pick up a couple more, and that would leave Republicans with that 5-seat pickup would now go down to 2 seats if Democrats pick up 2 more plus the Suozzi seat. So I think that's possible. But look, the thing that Hochul said, the sense that Trump is doing better in New York. Don't forget, in 2022, Trump was not on the ballot. And I think with Trump on the ballot, he's had, you know, 2 successful rallies in New York, 1 in the Bronx, 1 in Madison Square Garden. So I think a lot of things are in the air, but I suspect it will be close again. I don't think one party will run away with everything. I think there are pockets of Republican strength on Long Island, as you know well, and in other parts of upstate especially. The turnout in New York City doesn't matter so much in those congressional races. So I think there are some possible signs of Republican strength that even if they were to lose 1 or 2 seats, that would still be an improvement over where they were a couple of years ago.
I want you to hear some of what Harris has been calling Trump. Cut 6.
Unlike Donald Trump, I don't believe people who disagree with me are the enemy from within. He wants to put them in jail. He wants to put them in jail. I'll give them a seat at my table.
Donald Trump has told us his priorities for a second term. He has an enemies list of people he intends to prosecute. He wants to put them in jail.
It's not true. Does not have an enemies list. He says, yeah, I want to get things done. That's going to be my best revenge. Doesn't want to get rid of IVF. He's not going to sign an abortion ban. He's not going to arrest his opponents. I don't, you know, she says they always get on Trump and say you're not being accurate. I mean, is there something that she could say accurate?
Well, who's trying to put who in jail? Seems to me that that's what the Democrats are doing with him, and that's what they are happy to do with anybody who disagrees with him. Remember, they're anti-American. Look, Harris has run a bizarre campaign. It may be good enough, but someone, I think National Review I was reading earlier, said that last night it was one of the few times when she did not begin her speech with an attack on Trump. And someone in her campaign said, you know, closing on the positive. So you run an entirely negative campaign, and then in the final couple of nights you're going to be positive. That's I don't understand what she's really running on besides not being Donald Trump.
And also, a couple of things. She's not. Like, she has a chance to crack down and announce she's really going to be tough on crime. She won't announce. Tell us what the tough on crime bill, the Prop 36 in California, will. She's not going to tell us if she's going to vote for it or not. She's not going to tell us if what she's going to do on the border to fix things, except for she likes that bipartisan bill. Probably can't name a thing in it. Won't tell us if she's going to build a wall or not. Not really our business. And that she won't tell us what's going to happen with Israel. She has one ad running in Michigan, a different ad running in Pennsylvania. But she did lose Rashida Tlaib. Listen to this. Cut 12.
Don't underestimate the power you all have. More than those ads, those lawn signs, those billboards. You all have more power to turn out people that understand we got to fight back against corporate greed in our country.
And she said she will not endorse her. Here's Gretchen Whitmer on her not doing that. Cut 13.
Congresswoman Tlaib again refused to endorse the Democratic nominee. What would you say to that?
You know, there is a seat at the table for everyone. And I know that our Arab community, our Palestinian and Muslim communities, as well as our Jewish community, everyone's hurting. And so I think we need a commander-in-chief who can bring people together, who serves with integrity and is tough enough to use all the tools at her disposal to bring together peace where we can.
Really? That said nothing? She's studying under Kamala Harris. But that's problematic if you want to win that Arab vote or the Palestinian vote in Michigan.
Well, but again, Brian, I think what I take away from this is her failure to take a position. That, as you say, she's running one ad in Michigan and another ad in Pennsylvania, trying to appeal to Jewish voters in Pennsylvania and appeal to the Muslim Arab voters in Michigan. I mean, what kind of leadership is that? What mandate do you get? The historic point about an election is you present your solutions to the voters, and then they get to choose what solutions they like, and that's who they vote for. But if you're not really proposing a solution, you're proposing one avenue to one group and one avenue to another group, what is your policy? What are you going to do? That's what I talk about. That's what I mean when I say I don't understand her campaign. What is she trying to be elected on? Okay, if she wins just by running against Donald Trump, okay, you're the president. Now what are you going to do? It's like that the movie where I think it's called The Candidate, where Robert Redford, you know, unexpectedly wins. He's just campaigning out of a lark almost. He wins, and then the final scene, he looks at his handlers and says, "What do we do now?" I mean, that's sort of where Kamala Harris is. She has not staked herself
right
on anything real, anything significant. If she really believed in those things, she could do them now.
And Axios agrees with you. They call her the no-comment candidate. They say Harris and staff have refused to detail her position on more than a dozen of her previous stances the last 3 months in response to questions. The response to those inquiries, no comment. This makes her actual governing plans a mystery, even to many Democrats, given her past liberal record and current promise to govern from the middle. Right? I mean, what are you electing? What are you electing? I knew what Joe Biden stood for, even though he kind of lied. He said he was going to be a moderate, and he wasn't. But I knew you had an idea what Al Gore stood for. He was very direct, painful to listen to. Bill Clinton changed a lot in office, but actually for the better because he lost Congress. You know, Barack Obama was more to the left than we thought, but she's nothing. I can't even say she's more to the left. No, she's like she was in 2020. If she goes from the middle, this is like vaguely she intimated during the campaign. I just wonder if that's going to play a role at this point.
Well, look, I mean, I would hope so, because even when Axios quotes them as saying she's going to govern from the middle, where's the evidence of that? Where has she ever done anything from the middle? She broke 33 tie votes in the Senate. None of them were broken from the middle. They were all about the far left. So she's got no record that says she's going to govern from the middle. And I repeat myself, but I don't understand the idea of this campaign. Because even if you defeat Donald Trump, you have not laid out an agenda that the public has supported and that therefore they will support you when you these votes come through Congress or national emergencies. You have no base from which to operate. You have no consistency in your approach that the public can rely on. It defies any kind of political campaign, except because once you're in office, not being Donald Trump isn't even going to get you a free lunch.
Absolutely. These endorsements you wrote about, they're not going to do anything. I mean, I don't mean to be sound partisan, but Brett Favre in Wisconsin, they pretty much worship the guy. He said for the first time ever, I'm going to endorse you. I'm not sure what Bon Jovi in New Jersey does for Pennsylvania. Maybe he does. What Bruce Springsteen of New Jersey does for Pennsylvania or Georgia. Maybe he does. Willie Nelson. I don't know. Can that help in North Carolina? I don't know. Taylor Swift. Well, we're going to see J-Lo. What can that do in Florida? I don't know. But they have a ton of celebrities. I don't know how much it's helping. What do you think?
I don't think it helps at all. I think the celebrity card has been a dead letter for quite some time. It's almost mocking. I mean, J-Lo crying. I mean, she's got a lot to cry about. I don't think Kamala Harris is one of the things. I think it's just this is the Democratic playbook. Let's get famous people, and we'll go with that. I mean, it just strikes me that a campaign about nothing would be a presidency about nothing, and we can't afford that in this country. You know, Brian, I wrote Sunday about the media. We have never seen anything like this with the media. And the hatred for Trump is just so over the top. The distortions, the fabrications, they're just creating fictions and distorting everything he says, like giving him a dark motive, whereas she is just all joy and sunshine and reasonable and fair and trying to be inclusive. I mean, all of these media lies, I think if anything good comes of this election, and I certainly have made it clear I'm voting for Donald Trump, but beyond that, I think if there is a lack of trust in the media to such an extent that it's forced to go back and reconsider how it covers politics, how it presents America to Americans, I think that would be the best possible thing for this country, because the media has just forfeited trust.
Media Research Center said a coverage of the Democratic National Convention, 88% positive, Republicans 72% negative. ABC coverage, they did a study, 100% of their coverage of Harris was positive, 93% of the coverage of Trump is negative. Overall, it's 74-88. 74% negative on Trump, 88 positive on Harris. How could you possibly say you have an unbiased media?
Yeah. And look at even the Saturday Night Live. I mean, I watched a bit of that skit with Harris. The whole thing was from a sensitive, supportive point of view. There was, you know, there was no joke at her expense. The jokes were, oh, isn't that cute, that bad Trump. I mean, the contrast is striking, and it's manipulation.
Yeah.
It is not honest in the sense of even trying. It's out-and-out manipulation of words and facts, what you include, what you don't include. I've never seen anything like it. We've seen some of this before, but to this extent, I believe it's the first in history. I believe we've broken every low barrier for the media's conduct.
Michael Goodwin, thanks so much. Check out his columns at mgoodwin_NYPost. Thanks, Michael.
My pleasure, Brian. Thank you.
Back in a moment.
Covering this election year like no other, it's Brian Kilmeade. More to know. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen is the most recommended memory support brand by pharmacists.
This election is going to be one of the closest in history. Your vote will make the difference. That means you, Gary. Oh, blah, blah, blah. I'm just one person. No. Shut the f*** up, Gary. Last time, only a few thousand votes kept Trump out of office. And this time, we will hold you personally responsible, Gary.
Farrell, I don't know where a sense of humor went. There's no more comedies on television, number two. It's he is just vehemently anti-Trump. And I've seen him in other things, too. You know that Billy on the Block or whatever his name is that runs around interrupting people with his microphone? He was following him around as if he isn't Will Ferrell, one of the most famous, successful comedian actors in the country, SNL legend. He kind of like lost his mind. Robert De Niro style, almost.
But I mean, just look at SNL. I feel like if you come out of that, most of those people, that's how they...
Not Dennis Miller.
Well, that's true. Where has he been?
Yeah, nowhere. I saw him with Jimmy Fallon on his show, but I don't think he wants to do much anymore.
Yeah.
But, you know, you got to be funny still. Quick note. We're going to do History, Liberty, and Laughs. I know it seems like a long time away, but it's going to be at a beautiful theater over in Jacksonville. Huge theater. Just go to BrianKilmeade.com, especially WOKV listeners, to see out there in person. At that time, I think we'll probably be out of the election, out of the inauguration, and well into the first year. Maybe the honeymoon will be over by then. If it's Trump, the honeymoon's over the day he's elected, when he's president-elect. But if it's Harris, we'll see how long. Because remember, when Obama came out of the gates, I think he had 68% approval rating. That faded quickly. Don't forget, election coverage tomorrow on Fox and Friends 6 to 9, and keep it here on Fox News. Don't move.
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.